Oh, it is so nice to be able to gather together like this and to think about the wonderful things that God has done for us, and to revel in the things that we get to enjoy. We want to be steadfast. I'll tell you, living in the world that we live in, it's getting harder and harder to be steadfast. There are so many things that go on in our society that can pull us away from God. There are so many things that happen in our society that, it's getting harder and harder to know what the truth really is. It's hard to know how to be steadfast. We're seeing the growth of artificial intelligence. And I tell you, I have seen on a number of occasions videos that purport to be a speech that was given by some important person, and that person says something that is totally out of character for that person to say. It's hard knowing what's true. I wish I could tell you that I had some sort of a magic wand that I could hold up to the television or to the radio or even to phone calls that I get, and it would tell me whether this was a lie or not. But yeah, I don't have that. But we can be steadfast. We can, I think, find a way to refuse to allow Satan to perpetrate his lies so that we'll be drawn away from God. We don't have to let Satan win. And you know, lies are really the biggest weapon that he has. He walked about, Peter said, like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour, and he will lie. He's always been a liar. In Genesis, the third chapter, beginning at verse one, we're introduced to Satan. Yeah, imagine the scene, if you will. We've already met God, the Spirit, the Son, and the Father, who were there at creation. And in creation, they made their crowning achievement, Adam and Eve. So we know about Adam, and we know about Eve, and we know about the Father and the Son and the Spirit, and then along comes a serpent. This is Satan. He intrudes into what was originally in the garden. Genesis 3, the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which Jehovah God had made. He said to the woman, "Yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden?" The woman said to the serpent, "Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God had said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it." The serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die." Now, God had said, you'll die if you touch it, if you eat it. That was true. The serpent said, "You won't die. God knows in the day that you eat of it, therefore your eyes will be, that you eat thereof, your eyes will be opened. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil." First thing he does is lie. And he has continued to lie ever since. He lied in the Old Testament period. He lied in the first century. And I'll tell you, Satan still lies today. 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, at verse 3, from the New American Standard, the apostle warns the early Christians. He says, I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion to Christ. He was worried about it then. And you know something? We're still worried about it today. The question is, what can we do? Now, here's the disturbing part about lies. If Satan can get you to believe a lie, your life will be affected as if that lie were true. If Satan can convince you that you can't live like a Christian, it's just too hard. You can't do it. And if you believe that lie, you know what? You can't do it. I'll tell you how powerful lies are. If I can convince you that you can't walk, and I can somehow get you to believe that, you won't be able to walk. If a lie is believed, it affects us just like it was true. And you know, God warns us, it's really easy to believe lies. And there are, I suppose, a lot of reasons for that. In Proverbs, the wise man said, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. It's easy to believe something is good for us when it's not. Just like it was the case with Eve, it's the case with us. When you look at the world around you, you can conclude that what God has told you doesn't make sense because some things look good. It's a lie. Jeremiah, the 17th chapter, Jeremiah had this to say in verse 9, beginning, the heart is more deceitful than all else and is desperately sick. Who can understand it? As a psychologist, I tend to subscribe to a behavioral approach. And a behavioral approach says you can't really know what you would do because your heart is just deceitful. You can't really know what you would do. Think about that for a minute. I decide I am going to do this. I'm going to do a particular thing. And then I don't do it. That's what the Apostle Paul described in the end of Romans, the 7th chapter. He says, the good that I would, that I do not. Did you really believe that it was good? Maybe that's why you didn't do it. The heart is deceitful. And here's the key. I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give to each man according to his ways, according to the fruits of his deeds. Well, there are some lessons we can learn from that prophet. that Ron read about. I'm not going to take the time to reread that. I asked Ron to read the whole of that chapter. Were you surprised by anything that happened in that chapter? It's not a story that we think about very often. It's not a part of what we think of as the hero stories of the Bible. It could have been that young prophet, the prophet who came from Judah. He was a man of great strength, walked up to Jeroboam, said, "What you're doing is wrong." I wish I had that kind of strength. I would love to be able to show to the people that are around me that having drag queen story hours is just plain wrong. Oh, that prophet had a great deal of strength. But I'll tell you, there are some lessons we can learn. The first lesson you can learn from that story in 1 Kings, the 13th chapter, is that speaking truth causes liars to lash out at truth tellers. The prophet told the truth. Jeroboam was a liar. He said, fake altars are just as good as God's altar. You don't have to go down to Jerusalem to worship. You can worship here. He said, anybody that wants to be a priest can be a priest, and they're just as good as God-ordained priests. God had said that a certain tribe, the Levites, and a certain family within that tribe would serve as priests. The high priest, by the time of Jesus, was an office that was bought and sold. Caiaphas was the high priest when Jesus was crucified. Do you ever think about how he got to be high priest? He bribed the Romans. They made him high priest. And he put himself out there as if he was as much of an authority as the priests that God had ordained. Jeroboam was a liar. Prophet from Judah stood up and said, this altar is going to be destroyed. And you know, I guess I wish that I had the same backing that came from God in this case. Jeroboam is standing before the altar. He says, this altar is just as good as the one in Jerusalem. The prophet says, this altar is going to be destroyed. Boom, it's destroyed. Truth is declared. It's validated. The altar is destroyed. There's no question that this is true. What was Jeroboam's response? Arrest him. Now, his attempt to stop the prophet was thwarted by God. Jeroboam standing there said, arrest him, and suddenly he can't draw his arm back. But understand, liars are going to lash out when truth is told. And there's just no way that we can get around that notion. So we have to be prepared for it. Second thing, exposed liars are all about self-interest. Arrest him. He can't draw his arm back. He says, pray to God that my arm is restored. Self-interest. He didn't acknowledge the lie. He didn't acknowledge the truth. He'd been exposed, and he said, "Pray to God that my arm is restored." You skip down all the way to the very end. What about that old prophet that told the lie? Got the man of Judah to come home with him. That was just as egregious a lie as what Jeroboam had done. And what did the old prophet say? He didn't acknowledge that he'd lied. First thing he did was he blamed it on the man from Judah. He defied the Lord. That's why God killed him. And then he showed his greedy self-interest when he said, "When I die, I want to be buried next to him. I want to be like him, at least in death." He wanted his bones to be buried next to the man of God. Liars, even when you expose them, they're all about self-interest. And it will always be that way. And then the third lesson. Spotting liars requires constant vigilance. That man of God had great faith. And all I can say is that he ultimately believed the old man and his lies. My take on it is that he let his guard down. The old prophet made his lies sound as good as he could. He said, God spoke to me. I'm a prophet just like you are. And the man of Judah let his guard down. Liars will masquerade as God-fearers. Have you ever noticed that? Liars masquerade as God-fearers. I spent some time working in the prison system in Alaska. Now, I work primarily with male sex offenders in the treatment program at the Highland Mountain Correctional Facility. These are people who are pedophiles. They abuse children. One of the things that I learned is that they will masquerade as God-fearing people. Why did you abuse a child? Because I wanted them to be introduced to sexual relationships in a loving, caring way. This little girl was going to grow up and she was going to be introduced into the world of sexual intimacy by teen boys who didn't want anything to do with her. They just wanted sex. And I didn't want her to be exposed to that. They masquerade. There are a lot of people who are masquerading as God-fearers so that they can indoctrinate children. And it makes me very, very angry. Fact check. You know some things are true. You know they're true because you know God said them. Don't believe everything you hear. Know that truth is never self-contradictory. That was the case with the Apostle Paul. Remember in Corinth, he had to say, "These people are telling you that they're from God, and they're telling you something different than what you learned." He says, "Don't believe them." God never contradicts himself. Truth never contradicts itself. 2 + 2 = 4. If somebody tells you 2 + 2 = 5, even if they have an alphabet soup behind their name, it says PhD in mathematics, they're lying. Truth never contradicts itself. And I guess the best part about that is what Paul told Timothy when he was about to appoint elders. He said to Timothy, lay hands suddenly on no man. Some men's sins are open beforehand. You can see them. It's just obvious what they are. Some men, their sins follow after them, but they cannot be hidden. Eventually, truth comes out. And you know, I guess that's why I'm encouraged that eventually people who support aborting children for profit give themselves up because they make a mistake and they're caught on a hot mic and they say, yeah, that's why we did it. We abuse children. We mutilate children because it's profitable. We can be steadfast. We can stand against this kind of thing. We can refuse to allow God to allow Satan to win. We can always uphold God. And we will be successful. We can't do it and expect that God is going to destroy the altar like he did for the man of Judah. But we can expect that truth will always win out. We will be steadfast. We will not be moved. No matter what anyone says, we will stand with that man from Judah and we will say, that's a lie. And God will uphold us. We can be steadfast. You want to be like that? Put on Jesus. Give your life to him. Acknowledge him as the Lord of your life in baptism. He'll wash away everything that stands between you and God. Your sins will be forgiven. Like Dean said, you know, some of us bear a heavy burden. Some of us were liars. And we told some terribly damaging lies. God will take care of that. That's why Jesus died. And I revel in the fact that he will do that for me.